I studied engineering.
Okay.
I only studied math and applied math. I took some continuing education engineering courses, but on the job I became a military systems engineer at GTE.
Oh, okay.
And I found out there's this International Conference of System Engineers, so I called them.
Yeah.
And I joined. I just felt I wanted to, you know, a formal affiliation with what I did.
Yeah.
Because, see, I retired in 1990, and we did system engineering. If you look it up on the internet, system engineering really started with the military. And I worked on Air Force contracts for GTE and Navy also. One little contract with the Army. But that wasn't really system engineering. Never mind. Anyway, they didn't start really teaching system engineering till 2000, which was in universities.
Yeah.
Which was 10 years after I retired.
Okay.
Yeah, so
wow.
That's sort of a wake-up call, you know.
Yeah.
I have to say, I never felt as if I was doing anything unusual. You know, I was just doing what felt right for me and what I wanted to do. And my father was an engineer, and my uncles were engineers, and my cousins were engineers, my older cousins, one of them anyway.
So your last job was systems engineering, right?
Well, I became a system engineer working at GTE.
Okay.
And I can tell you exactly how I became an engineer, not having studied it. Okay. and had no degrees in engineering. I asked my boss one day at work at GTE, you know, I'm confused, I'm not sure, am I a mathematician or an engineer? Okay, from the work I was doing, I wasn't sure.
What was your current position at this time, before systems engineering? Did it have a name?
At the time, I would have been working on satellite communications.
Okay.
You know, they were one of the problems I remember was how often do they have to update the computations, because they weren't polar satellites. You had to wait till they came into until you had what they call mutual visibility. And they worried about, you know, they had to think of the roundup error, you know, when they had to update what they were doing. So that's what one of the things I remember doing at the time. And I remember it well because I gave them a time frame. And some PhD up in the Waltham office said they could do it less often, and they sent me up to find my mistake. And it really stuck with me because he had a PhD from a Swiss university and was very European and, you know, confident. And he gave me his book. I had just figured it out. So he gave me the book on orbital mechanics and told me to take it home and find my mistake. You know, instead I found his mistake.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
There were two little angles, and you could approximate the sine by the angle.
Okay.
And he picked the wrong angle. And I had made, typical of me, I had made a mathematical error. So my answer was about, my answer should have been like 50% longer, which is better, the less often. But his was way off. I mean, his wouldn't have worked at all. Mine was better than it needed to be.
And so he thought you, and you found this because he thought you were wrong.
Oh, my boss sent me up to find my mistake. Which I did, but it wasn't the mistake he thought.
Yeah.
And I remember it very well because I didn't know how I was going to tell this somewhat arrogant
PhD.
I think he had a German background from a Swiss PhD, and he was older, and you know,
yeah.
I'm a little Jewish girl, gotta tell him he made a mistake. So I did tell him, and I said to him, you know, at the end, I said, you know, I showed him, and he knew immediately I was right. And I said to him, yeah, well, I made a mistake too, and I have to give him a little credit, you know, I have to give him the credit that he looked at him, and he said, yeah, but yours would work, which was, that was good.
But that was good that he said that.
Yeah, it was good. But he wasn't happy. I mean, it was very, very embarrassing for him.
Oh.
Yeah, it was embarrassing for him to say that this upstart came from Needham. And they were in the research labs, you know.
Yeah.
And I was writing. So anyway, was around that time, I said, am I a mathematician or an engineer? And my boss immediately said, well, you're an engineer. And I said, how could you answer so quickly? You know, you didn't even think about it. And he said to me, well, I know what you get paid, and engineers make more money than mathematicians. And at that point, I said to him, thank you very much. I'm never going to say I'm a mathematician again. From now on, I'm an engineer. And so it is. I studied mathematics.
Yeah.
But I am an engineer. You know, once an engineer. Do you have a degree in engineering?
I have a degree in physics.
Oh, in physics. Yeah, well, mine was in math.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I found out about Society of Women Engineers, I asked if I could join, and they said yes, so I did.
Yeah. And you wanted to join something that had to do with your profession, right? Yeah, me too.
Well, no, I mean, I was working with Arthur D. Little at the time.
Yeah.
In 1953. And I was the only woman doing things like that. I mean, at one point...
Can you repeat that? In 1953, you were working where?
At Arthur D. Little.
Oh, Arthur D. Little. Okay.
I think they still exist. The headquarters was on Memorial Drive.
Okay.
And when I first got the job, that's where I had my interview. And then I worked in Kendall Square. They had an office there. And the Boston Globe was doing an article on women in science or something, and somebody came to my office at the time and to interview me. And I thought it was sort of silly. You know? I don't take these things that seriously.
Yeah.
They said to me, I'm just doing something normal. So I remember when they took my picture, I made a point of holding my slide rule upside down, my little defiant statement. But I really was unusual. Somebody came from the head office to this is really ridiculous. Came from Memorial Drive and walked all the way over to Kendall Square to find the woman who voted for Radley Stevenson.
But
Eisenhower won the election.
Oh.
And he was Republican. And I guess Arthur D. Little was a very Republican company. So he heard that some woman in Kendall Square, some girl, voted for Radley Stevenson. And he came over, and I remember saying to him, he walked all the way over here just to find somebody. Yes, I said, why? He said, well, I couldn't believe it. I said, well, believe it, I did.
Yeah.
So, I just wondered why people thought it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people voted for Stevenson. I wasn't the only one. I mean, just because he lost doesn't mean nobody voted for him. But anyway.
Yeah.
So I joined the Society of Women Engineers, and I think there were about six of us in the chapel. We used to meet in somebody's living room.
Actually, that's still happening. This Sunday, we're going to meet in my living room. So, traditions.
Yeah, it's about how many of you? But I mean, that was the whole chapter. Just six of us met.
Right now, about six of us run it. Whereas
there's
about 500 right now.
Exactly.
Yes.
But I'm saying we were the whole membership.
Yes.
At one point, I think I was president of the Boston chapter for a short time. Very short, not very long. And I might have been treasurer for a while.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that much to do.
Can you tell me about your childhood and growing up and your relationship to like math and science? Were you encouraged to do it? Were you not?
I was never discouraged from doing anything that I can think of, with the exception of wanting to marry a non-Jewish boyfriend. But that was major discouragement. And I didn't marry him, but that wasn't because of my parents. It was because of, you can either say him or me or his mother or whatever. But no, the thing is, my father was an engineer. I was born in 29, and then the Depression started. I was born in May.
What's your birthday in May?
May 12th.
May 12th, 29. I'm May 3rd, 89.
Yeah. 89, yeah. Okay.
I think that's, yeah.
Yeah, my cousin's son is May 3rd. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I'll think of you from now on.
Yeah.
So anyway, my father have a job, and in some respects I had a happy childhood. In some respects I didn't, because we didn't have any money.
Oh.
And my father's mother didn't like my mother, so my mother returned the favor. And but I always got along with everybody. But the thing is, my father was an engineer, and that was very important.
Yeah.
And
what was your mother?
My mother, she was just at home.
Okay.
She had worked. My mother was an interesting situation, because she had had a very serious automobile accident before she even met my father. And the newspaper said she died.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it was so bad. And she was in a coma. And, but she got better. But in retrospect, I realized that it affected her memory. She didn't remember certain things. And in some ways, it seems to me my mother got smarter as she got older. You know, people sort of...
Whereas usually it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can remember going to places with my mother. Like, we'd get to Park Street T Station, and all the streetcars there at the time, I don't know how it is now, I haven't been there in decades. And my mother would say to me when I was maybe 7 or 8, but I could read, you know, I learned to read when I was 5. And she'd say to me, what streetcar do we want? You know, so I just took such things for granted. You know, when we'd go someplace and I'd say, I'd know the number we were going to. I mean, she probably told me.
Yeah.
But when we got there, you know. So we were close, but anyway.
So you took after your dad?
I remember when I was a very little girl, we had to live with my mother's parents. My father didn't have a job. Okay. And I can remember teenage girls in the neighborhood, because it was that kind of a street. And these girls asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
And I said, I want to be an engineer like my daddy, which seemed like a natural thing for me to say. And they laughed. So I remember very well asking my father why they laughed. And he said something like, well, they're silly.
Good.
And I said, well, you know, why can't a girl be an engineer? And you know, because the way they laughed, you know, this was a laughable thing. And I remember my father said, a girl can be an engineer. He said, it's not usual.
Yeah.
It's not a usual thing, but a girl can be an engineer. So I said, okay, so I want to be an engineer. And
that's
I didn't
good.
Care if it wasn't usual.
Yeah.
You know? But so I knew from an early age.
Yeah.
But then we used to, at one point we used to walk on Sunday. As I said, my mother didn't like my grandmother. So on Sunday morning, my father and I would go to visit his family, which was fine. You know, my mother had her own time. And he used to tell me how car engines worked. I don't know if I asked questions or what, but he would explain to me about the piston compressing the gasoline and be a little explosion and this and that.
Oh.
And the spark plugs. And I don't really, I never was good at that kind of thing. But so I remember the concepts. You know, I was always sort of a concept person. And I really was a paper engineer. I was good at specs and things like that, you know. And just
numbers.
Systems, you know. I could analyze things and say, well, this should be done in hardware and this should be done in software.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
That looks very nice. Thank you.
I got this because I saw someone else get it from the other table. Someone else got this from the other table.
Oh, look, that's good.
Yeah, it looked good.
Oh, I don't know if you want ketchup on the fries. It's ketchup. I don't use it. But so anyway.
So, yes.
Then I decided I liked algebra, and I took algebra. I really liked it. I liked the idea that...
Of algebra?
Yeah, that you could have an unknown and find out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
I liked it, too.
So I told my father that I decided I wanted to study math. Now, it sort of went by me, I have to say, and it's almost embarrassing to admit this, but it wasn't that long ago, I'm 89. It was not that long ago that I was falling asleep. And I never felt that my parents took it seriously, that I needed money to go to college. You know, because when I told my father I wanted to study math, he said, so, and I said, what's the best school to study math? And he said, MIT.
That's true, yeah.
And my father, he ended up having a nice career at Honeywell and Digital in the end. Anyway, so I said, well, I want to go to MIT.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I mentioned it, my father said, good luck.
He didn't. Wow.
So I remember saying to myself, I'm on my own.
Yes.
So recently, I got over it, obviously.
But you did go to MIT. All right.
So recently, it was like, what did they expect me to do if I didn't go to college? They didn't take it seriously. You know, I was really gripped. So now it's before you fall asleep. You know, you can get into a mood. And it was like, boo, boo, boo. You know, I didn't take it seriously. What was the matter with me? What did they expect me to do? I said, what's the matter with you? And I had to go to junior high school.
Yeah.
My father said to me, you'll have to choose a commercial course or a college course.
What's a commercial course?
Well, they teach you typing in short.
Oh, trade. Okay.
So this was for girls. I don't know, I think boys got shop or something. I don't know. Doesn't matter. So he said to me, you'll probably be a secretary like your aunts. And you'll probably go to commercial college like your mother and your aunts, which is Burdett College, which I don't think exists anymore. And everybody in his family was good with numbers. You know, the men were engineers.
And you?
His three sisters, they were more than bookkeepers. You know, they were like business managers. And one of them married a dentist and did a lot of work like that for charitable organizations or the condo she lived in or whatever. But the other two were really hot shot. They were really business managers. So, and my mother had gone to Burdett College. Before she had her accident, she was operating the first. They had, I think, with the Moon Hopkins billing machine, she said she was, which was probably like using a computer in those days. So that's the point. My parents didn't expect me to go to college. It wasn't expected. They didn't mind that I wanted to go, but of course they didn't take it seriously. So when I got turned down to every college I applied to.
Oh, okay.
And they weren't particularly perturbed. I was perturbed. But my parents weren't. So
that's sad.
So I can't. And then if I wanted my mother, when I was at Amherst, and if I wanted to apply for a scholarship or even a loan, and I needed records to go somewhere, my mother would go to the high school and go by streetcar to deliver it. And,
yeah.
You know, so they were very responsive. But not proactive.
I see. They weren't trying to guide your life. If you wanted to do it, fine. But you'd have to start it yourself. Interesting.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
So.
But we've been talking about England.
The summer before my senior year in high school. I think some of these insights that I've had as I've got older are maybe interesting and could be helpful to somebody.
Yeah.
Because to note the distinction between supportive parents, or parents that are not supportive, and parents that just let you be.
So
in the middle, watch this video.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
You didn't get into it yet.
Yeah.
I'm worrying about your sleep.
Yeah.
So,
so what type of parents?
Yeah, just, so they just let me be. But what the other point I wanted to make is between my junior and senior year, I was worried about taking the SAT exam.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a book, a math problem from the SATs. And I spent most of the summer doing math problems.
For the SATs.
And my high school did not teach solid geometry.
Okay.
Was a high school for girls.
Oh, really?
It didn't teach college level physics.
Do you remember the name of your high school?
Of course, Jeremiah Lee Burke High School for Girls, which is now co-ed.
Oh.
I was there a couple of years ago.
At your high school?
To give the three awards. I saw they were looking for volunteers.
Oh, the merit.
And it was the last thing in the world I had time to do or wanted to do. But when I saw it, my high school was on the list. Nobody will go there. Nobody will volunteer to go.
Yeah.
Practically in Roxbury. In fact, I think a year later, somebody got killed in the schoolyard. Yeah. when I called and I asked how the neighborhood was, they said it's okay in the daytime. The next year somebody got killed in the daytime in the schoolyard.
Oh my goodness.
I'm very good at experience. I'm really glad I don't know.
Those certificates are merit certificates. SWEET gives them out at high schools, and it's nice to have like a real woman engineer give them the certificate.
And they said I wasn't enough.
And it's awarded
to... The auditorium was exactly the same.
Yeah. And I believe the member who runs it is Darcy. She does... That's her thing for us.
And they said, they said I was an alum. And they said, I think they said, I had graduated in 64. And I'm sitting there waving my arms saying, no, no, 46. And everybody's looking at me like she's still alive. Anyway, so here I am doing problems. And I really was enjoying myself. I was sitting on the front steps of our apartment house doing math problems. And I was thinking to myself, you know, why do I like math so much? And I realized it was like going to an alternate world. You know, I really liked math because I didn't like the environment I lived in. And I could go to this place where I had control. You know, I could solve problems. And
yeah, and there's a right answer.
Good. There's a right answer, yeah.
It makes sense.
And so I could go into another world.
Yeah.
And I had control. It was up to me if I could do it or not. So I remember that when I was 16.
Studying for the SATs.
Yeah. And coming to that realization, I really like
math
and science all together. I mean, you know, this was in the era when girls were screaming over Frank Sinatra. And I had a cousin, I think a second cousin, a year behind me in my school, who skipped school to go hear Frank Sinatra. And I remember thinking she was so silly to do that. Who cares about Frank Sinatra? I'm still not such a fan. You know, he's got a nice voice, okay. So, but I was enthralled with Einstein.
Yeah.
I just wanted to understand the theory of relativity. I can still remember.
That's your Frank Sinatra.
But the thing is, how did I go to college? I got turned down by everybody.
Yeah.
MIT, Harvard. Tough. My father and all my uncles and my cousins had gone to Tufts. I applied to Jackson. That was the worst experience. My friend and I went by streetcar to Medford for the interview. And the dean of women said to me, why do you want to major in math? I said, well, you know, I like it. And she said, you'll be taking the seat a veteran can have, and he would use it. It'll be wasted on you.
Wow.
Then I said, I'm not going to waste it. I don't intend to waste it. I said, anyway, you're too sick to go to college. I was...
Were you sick?
16. No, I said, what do you mean I'm too sick? I said, you have allergies. I still have allergies. I'm 89.
Allergies?
Allergies.
That's why she said you were too sick.
No. I was not so healthy, but...
Allergies, though.
But I just looked at her. I said, I managed to get all A's in high school.
Yeah.
I said, I think I'm going to last another 4 years. Because I knew I wasn't going to get in, you know. So they didn't turn me down. So it was Harvard, MIT, Tufts, BU, and UMass. They all turned me down. And all the letters at that time said, your qualifications aren't high enough. And my high school principal, nobody from my high school got accepted to UMass. My principal went to see the Commission of Education.
Yeah.
And said that I have an accredited high school. And if Janice Rittenberg, that's who it was, has all A's, and if her credentials aren't high enough, I mean, my school is no good.
Yeah.
But I have an accredited high school. So they sent me a letter basically saying they made a mistake.
Oh.
And they put two girls on the waiting list. And one was going to Simmons anyway, and the other was going to Connecticut College.
Do you have this letter?
No. But well, Dean Landfield mm-hmm. and I took his astronomy course. Never said anything to him. But going into the final, I had 100 average. And I did graduate summa cum laude in 3 years.
Oh, good.
So you don't take these things seriously.
Eric, who started?
And you had majored in math.
He didn't waste your entrance.
Was first coined by one of my mentors.
Kids get told ridiculous things by adults.
Yeah.
They shouldn't listen. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. I don't know why my voice is bad today. Probably my allergies. So now you know how I got interested in engineering. It was really my father.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember he brought, when I was a child, a couple of things I remember. One of them, I'm not sure what it really was, but he brought home like a microphone one time, and I talked into the microphone,
right,
and it came out of the radio. I think there's still kids' things like that.
Yeah.
Did you ever have something like that? I don't know, it's five.
I think they're different now.
I thought that was mind-boggling. I really do. And you know, years later, at UMass, I was chairman of the summer session social committee because it was my second summer, so they made me chairman.
Yeah.
And we wanted to have a dance. And they were mostly veterans here. And one of the guys really wanted girls to come. Maybe it was that time. So he found out we could get nurses from the local hospital. So we arranged for the university bus to go get the girls for the dance. Yeah.
Okay.
And we needed music, so we had a hall, a memorial hall. We needed music. So some of the guys had records.
Yeah.
And somebody had a record player that would play through the radio.
Oh.
So what we did, I mean, this was my idea, I thought, beautifully. So we brought the record player,
yeah,
and we had a bunch of guys bring their radios.
Yeah.
And we put them all around the room, and we played our records, and we put some cornstarch on the floor, and we made a punch with, I think, sherbet and ginger ale.
Yeah.
and we had a very nice dance. But it was all started with my father bringing home a microphone.
Oh, wonderful. Was this dance during college or high school?
Yeah, college.
College.
It must have been summer of 48. We had a big barbecue too that the Globe wrote up. Had like 1,000 people. It's in the archives, they have photos.
Yeah. Do you remember your work around the submarine? A submarine? Do you remember working around a submarine?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Do you remember where that happened in your timeline, in your life? Like, between what times? Like, what you were doing before and what you were doing after? Was it a job you took immediately after college or later?
No, it was later.
Like, after college, what did you become a systems engineer right after college? I mean, or a mathematician and then became a system?
This conversation with my boss must have been in the 60s. When I was at Arthur D. Little.
When you were what?
At Arthur D. Little, right after.
Right after college?
After MIT.
Oh, after MIT, okay.
They put me to work calculating, I think it was stresses or torques, I don't remember what, on the, calm beams, but on the structure of the submarine. You know, I had where it was and how they would, I was working for an engineer.
Yeah.
I was a mathematician. I had taken applied math for engineers at MIT. But the Navy wouldn't let me go into submarine.
I read that in an interview that you did with, I forgot where it wasn't with Swede, but you did another interview, and I remembered that story where you were an engineer for the submarine, and you weren't allowed to be on the submarine because you were a woman.
And 20 years later, I was working on what they call Seafarer. You can look up when they did that.
Okay.
And it was after I worked on Minuteman and MX. And I'm trying to remember if I was I think that's before we had different phases. And I don't think I was a technical director in engineering. Yeah, but maybe I was.
No dessert. Yeah.
You have any chocolate chip cookies too?
Yeah.
I'd like a couple of cookies and milk.
So I got to go to somewhere. We were. There's a program to send extremely low frequency messages to submerged submarines.
Yeah.
So they could stay hidden stealth. And I think, they were in Soviet waters, probably where they shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Had to do it. Sort of all. So I got to go on the submarine. As they were seafaring, I'm trying to remember what year that was. But it's easy to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was before I was on MX.
That was before what? FX?
The MX missile program.
Oh, MX missile program. Okay.
That was supposed to be like Mobile Minuteman.
Yeah.
And I never did it. But in the meantime, we went with the biggest contract we ever got.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was drinking tea this morning. I'm sorry, those are open the race, they're not talking to me. Those are raisins.
Yeah.
You don't have that level of understanding. Okay. Well, you might as well put those back. Okay. Do you want them? Do you like?
Huh? I couldn't take them. Yeah, sure.
Doesn't know the difference. They're obviously raisins.
I know. It's very disappointing.
So. Oh, we actually got the message to the submarine. Then,
yeah.
And I actually got on the submarine.
Yes, eventually.
But it also ended up. I was almost involuntarily a whistleblower.
Oh. Can you tell me, or are you allowed?
I can tell you, because it turned out all right. And to, I think to the company's credit, one of the project managers that were in engineering, and I was the technical director, he came and told me that we had this antenna in Clam Lake, Wisconsin, overhead antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And he said two telephone guys were, it was in the state park in Clam Lake. We had a Navy facility in Wisconsin, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had one in Michigan.
Yeah.
And they almost, I don't know if they ever had one in Nevada. It was very funny. Anyway, he said his telephone guys were stringing wires, and one of them touched a truck and got shocked. This was high voltage system.
Did he die?
No.
Oh. But so he was just injured? Or?
Yeah. But it was scary. Why? We had grounds, we had safety.
Yeah.
Precautions.
That's dangerous.
And I was already upset because I on my own had called safety design review. The customer didn't require it, but I was concerned about safety. That's the way I am. And so I looked, and a lot of people didn't want to pay any attention to me, especially the program office, But I looked, and I had the authority to call internal reviews. So I just used to do it, best. When in doubt, appeal to a higher authority.
Yeah.
I did that a couple of times. People wouldn't do what I wanted. Say according to such and so policy procedures, I'm calling this such and so time. Please bring that's in the memo. So I had done that, and we had action items opening list to pay the closing. I was already very concerned. Now we got this guy got injured. So they tell me. Yeah, the program office is having a meeting to restart the system. So why did the guy get hurt? Well, I don't know, but the Navy wants the system restarted. They're going to restart it. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't like
that's dangerous.
For a couple of reasons. I went to the company lawyer. I'd already been over the safety. And I said, I'm concerned about company liability. I also, when they have technical manuals, that said when there was national emergency that the GTE people should override the safety devices. I would not sign it.
Mm-hmm.
I got the legal department to say no. And I remember having a conversation and saying, it's a Navy system. If they want to override it, let them override it. GTE doesn't need that liability. And somebody said to me, well, it could be the middle of the night. They'd be asleep. I'd say, it's a national emergency. Wake them up.
Yeah.
You know, I just wouldn't do it. And the customer didn't like it when they said the technical manuals are in the hands of the legal department. So that was almost a separate issue. Now somebody's injured. So I went back to the lawyer. And I actually said to him, if we had a military tool, did the Navy take over the country? What's going on here? Why is GT going to do this? He marched me into the manager in charge of all the contracts, you know, in the front office. Told him the same thing. That's where GT was. I like GT. Picked up the telephone, called the program office. They had were having a meeting that I was not invited to. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they taught him.
That's
this woman, you know, this technical director, and my boss was there, I think. He told him, don't start up the system.
Yeah.
Don't do it. It turned out, this is almost shocking, there'd been a previous contract way before I knew nothing about it with RCA. They were thinking of doing an underground system. There were 35 miles of buried cable.
Yeah.
That everybody had pretty much forgotten about, and I didn't know about at all. So they had buried cables, and they had the overhead antenna, and somebody strung a wire in between and touched the metal truck.
Really?
That's like a transformer, I do believe.
Wow.
An induced current, isn't it? When it's between two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really understand these things that well, but I know that's what caused it, was an induced current. The guy got shocked. So my boss actually said to me, people don't like what you did. I said, why? You know, somebody got shocked. And he said, well, because now they have to dig up the 35 miles of buried cable. And you're already overrun. And I said, Tim, well, that can't be my fault. I didn't know the 35 miles away. And he said, well, anyway, they don't like what you did.
Someone had to be that person.
You know what I did?
Yeah.
It was a nice Irish Catholic guy, very smart, very Irish Catholic, though. I just looked at him and I said, well, Hitler didn't like me either, and I left. So they dug up the cable. So I was a wizard.
Yeah.
There
are a lot of
diseases. You can't wimp out.
Huh?
You can't wimp out.
Yeah.
And eventually, my boss said they were going to have a meeting to close out, I mean, to deal with the safety.
And they have to do what's right, not what's easy. And it looks like they listen to you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, no, the time.
Yeah.
When the Challenger blew up,
yeah.
I had a chance. I was in a meeting with the guy that wouldn't let him start the system. And I passed him a note, and I said, what do you think of the Challenger?
Yeah.
His answer was right on. He said, I think it's too bad when upper management won't listen to their engineers.
Yeah.
But GTE did.
Yeah.
And
that's a great story. I really appreciate that one.
Yeah.
I've been reading some of that interview, and I don't think that was included. So I feel special. Thank you for sharing that with me.
There's no GT now, and a lot of the people are dead. So.
Yeah.
I would not go to the meeting on the safety action items. Yeah. Unless I told my boss I will only go if we're going to assign people to close.
People to close?
The action items from the safety design.
Yeah.
Because we have these open action items and somebody needs to pay to close them. They called this man in charge of safety for the whole company. They called him back afterwards. So, okay, so we assigned him. They called the safety design bigwig back. They wouldn't pay for him to go to the site, you see, and called him back from vacation. And he was very happy. He went to the site. It was only one site operation. It turned out that they were shy. Some inordinate number of safety notices, you know, high voltage.
Yeah.
You know, you need earplugs. You know.
Well, either way, they got the safety guy back,
you know,
right?
Heavy lifting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Wasn't just all high voltage, but there was a lot of that too. So they closed them. And that was my original concern. And eventually the program manager stopped me. And he said to me, I really think it's good that you went the second time, he said to me, and you know, kept him from starting it up.
Yeah.
He admitted to me. He said, but I still don't like that you went the first time. And I said to him, well, I said, let's say 35. I said, I don't think that 35 missing safety signs at one of two sites is a minor thing. He said that, you know, it wasn't that important or something. And I said, I don't think that's unimportant.
Yeah.
I just left it at that.
And you are right, it would have been very bad if they continued without being closed.
Well, my boss had the attitude. He said, nobody pays attention to them anyway. I said, that's their problem. They should. Mm-hmm. Now, they should be trained to pay attention. But I said, we have to warn them. Well, it's really, you have to stand for something.
Right.
And I think engineers need to be concerned about company liability.
Yeah.
I don't bring it up just because, oh, I was so brave or something. What's really important is if you have a position of responsibility, that should be part of what you're doing.
Yes.
So think about
people's
responsibility, including the company's responsibility.
And how it affects everyone. Not just the customer, but the company as well. So I would like to wrap up this interview. Are there any final thoughts that you would like to share to either current members or future members of SWE, women engineers?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that I think are really important. No, obviously a lot of things that happen, but two things I think are important. I tried never to tell people what to do. You know, I told them what I wanted. I think being assertive is I would like to do. Here's a conference, it'd be good for somebody from the company to go.
Yeah.
I would like to go, if you can't find anybody else. Not you should, you should send, I think.
Yeah, say I think instead of you should.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's always a good idea, like if you're looking for a job or whatever. When I never would say, I want such and such a salary.
How she would say it.
My attitude is, if somebody offers a salary and I didn't like it, I would say, I think I can do work that's worth more for the company than that.
Oh.
It's all about the company.
Yeah.
They don't really care about you, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They care about them. Yeah. So it isn't, I want to go to a conference. It would be good for the company to send somebody to a conference. Okay?
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's good to say what you want, assertive. That's good.
Yeah.
So I think that's good.
Yeah.
The other thing, a couple of serious times, I was told, you know, women shouldn't do this or women shouldn't be at this meeting. No, I never thought of suing the company. I never thought. Once I just said, that should be part of my job, and I don't want half a job.
Yes.
If I can't do that, then you need to give me a different job, because this should be part of my job.
Yeah.
And it worked out fine. It's a very short version, but it worked out fine.
Yeah.
So you're entitled to be inserted. And you're also entitled to remember what you are to the company.
Yeah.
Okay? Another time, two more times, bear with me.
Yeah.
I was told, I was recommended for a job I didn't want. I did not want it. I was told they wanted a man on the job. I was recommended for an important job on the submarine program.
Yeah.
The outgoing technical director said I should do it.
But you didn't want it.
I did not want it, but I was told they wanted a man in the job.
Oh.
In front of a witness, which was a terrible thing to do to the company.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't sue. You should always figure, if one person tells you something, you shouldn't think that's typical. Your position should be, even if you believe it, don't believe it, even if you don't believe it, your position should be,
yeah,
this is not what the company is.
Yeah.
If they don't know it, you should.
That's a good way to
make
say
them
it.
Think. Yes. That's what I did. This
yeah.
does not represent the company.
Right.
And when they say, I said, he's irrelevant to me, and they said, can't say your boss is irrelevant. I don't think he represents the company. If you're going to tell me he does, I'll have to go away and think about that, because I don't believe he represents his company. And he didn't. He didn't. He never had a management position afterwards. And I didn't. I just said he should never be in a position to do this to another woman.
Right.
And he never was. Okay? And when I thought, and then when we were bidding MX, he basically was his organization. I was alone. I said, I'm quitting. I'm not going to be treated this way. You're not entitled to use my name with the Air Force. You have to know who you are. Your name has to mean something to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't quit. I was told I was the first member of the new division.
Oh.
My name stayed in the proposal. I got an upgrade and a 15% salary increase and a new boss. I wouldn't. And my husband, when I told him I'm going to quit, my husband said, I'm so relieved. I said, you are? I had a good job, you know. And he said, yes. And I said, why? He said, I thought you were going to let him get away with it.
Yes.
So
he's on your side.
But I'm saying, you have to know who you are. You know, maybe if you don't have the power, Right. You have to do something a little different. But you have to know who you are and what you can do. And I still think with this Me Too business,
yeah.
I, to my mind, even when my uncle pinched me when I was a little girl, I told my mother, if somebody did anything to me, my view would be, I'm going to tell everybody. And if the man said to me, or the woman, or whoever, said they won't believe you, I once reported a condo manager
yeah.
to the Attorney General of Maine.
Yeah.
And they said, we can't do anything about it. And I said to him, but the next time you're here, it'll be the second time. It won't be the first. And if somebody does something to you, and you say, I'm going to tell the world.
Yeah.
And they say, nobody will believe you. They may not believe me, but they'll believe the next one and the one after.
Yeah.
So, not good to be silent.
Yeah. That was the purpose of the Me Too movement, I believe.
Of the what?
Of the Me Too movement.
Yes, because you speak up
yeah.
in the first place, you have more credibility when there's safety in numbers.
Yeah.
And the second place, if they don't believe the first one, they'll certainly think about it the second one. And the third one
yeah.
will really light a fire.
Right.
And they had to petition her supervisor. That's right. And also, you know, like, these, I suppose the women in the entertainment industry, wouldn't be the same as engineers in the first place. I'm not going to put it any more than that. But you have to know if somebody says, well, you know, I won't give you the job unless you do such and so or whatever. You have to have the attitude. You may find somebody else, but they won't be as good as me.
Yeah.
Even if you don't believe it. I mean, that's got to be. You know, I had an interview for a job. This is another thing that I think was important. My father worked at Melpop.
Yeah.
And they wanted to interview me. And the guy, well, he was another story. But he interviewed me and he said, here's our salary curve, you know, because they did hire me, I did work for them. And he said to me, what percentile shall I put you in?
What did you?
I looked at him, I said, 100. And he said to me, I mean, nobody's 100%. I said, what do you expect me to say? I'm a 50% person?
Yes.
I say 100%. I said, if you think I'm less, that's up to you to decide. I'm not going to vote against myself. You know, you don't fall into, you have to
yeah.
think about, don't fall into traps like that. Don't,
yeah.
don't. I blame yourself.
That was inspirational.
What would you say if somebody said, what percentile should I put you in? What answer is there?
Well, like you said, it's a trap.
Yeah, when did you stop beating your wife?
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah.
What's your husband do?
My husband is a science teacher, and I am a software engineer.
And where do you work?
I work at Cognizant. It's a healthcare company.
It's a what?
Healthcare.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's job security, actually.
Yeah.
If you keep up with the software.
Yeah.
My best friend was the lead software engineer on the ELF program, the Seafarer. Well, but there was sang when there was Seafarer. By the time we were on, it was extremely low frequency. Yeah.
That's and,
you know, and the other thing, we had one guy, he was a good engineer, but he owed me a report once.
Yeah.
And I saw him in the hall and I said, where's my report? She started trying to tell me a joke, a bad joke. Well, I knew most, I didn't know disgusting jokes, but I knew funny jokes.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, yeah, the salesman, the farmer's doctor, blah, blah, blah. And I just said to him, you think you're going to distract me with this?
You know, he I did said, think
it's not
he would.
Working. I still want my report. So. You know, they do things like that.
Yeah.
My Irish Catholic boss, he was bright red. He heard me with my answer because I gave him the punchline.
Oh, yeah.
He was bright red. He was so embarrassed. See, it was easy to distract him, not me.
Yeah.
That's
good. Thank you. Thank you very much for your insight and for speaking with me today.
Well, you know,
yeah.
Like I said, to me,
yeah.
We just picked up a new employee.
It was just like the thing to do. I don't know. But I guess looking back was a little different.
It was. Especially in your time. It's much different. Like all of the things that happened to you would never happen to me nowadays.
One would hope.
Yeah.
But I think some places they still do. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And you know, I have to say, with Society Women Engineers, I don't know how many times, maybe now it's different. They have a new president, and she says, when I graduated from high school, the only jobs for a girl were to be a nurse or a teacher. And I just shudder. I mean, so many decades after I retired, and I was still reading that. I just thought it was so sad.
I believe that's no longer the case. There are a lot of women getting into or studying engineering. But the problem now is that they're not staying. And that's why the numbers now are about 15% of all engineers, that's 15, 15, are women.
And like I think about half the students at MIT.
Yeah.
But you know,
they're studying it, but they're not staying.
I give a little scholarships at UMass. And one year, I went to a breakfast. Don't ask me why I got up that early. And I met a lovely young woman. Ida Slima, her name is. You can find her on Facebook. EYDIS Lima.
Okay. EYDIS. Okay.
EYDIS Lima. Okay. Like the Lord. And she was one of the Cuban boat people. Her father was an engineer.
Yeah.
And he didn't bring him to Florida. He brought him to New Jersey. Why do I mention her? She's lovely. I mean, I still check her out on LinkedIn. And she wanted to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And her father wanted her to get married.
Her father wanted?
He wanted her to get married. He didn't want her to be a doctor. See? And I really felt bad. I didn't feel quite wealthy enough to tell her I would send her to medical school. But she's in some kind of research lab.
Oh.
And she's active in LinkedIn. She's always posting interesting things.
Yeah.
And she wanted to find a cure for cancer. Somebody had cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'm saying, maybe the way we grew up, Well, the way you grew up, I should say, were you.
Yeah.
And the way that a lot of American kids are growing up, it's true what you said. But there are a lot of kids in Hispanic families, and maybe African families, that they're not, we still need to be, have a society where we're actually is.
We still need.
And believe me, at the Jeremiah Burke School, they still need help. Although the administrator I talked to there, his daughter was going to MIT, which was good. But I made a point when I gave the awards. I gave them to the girls, and I said I was very happy to do this. And I said, from personal experience, engineering and science and technology, it's a great career to have. And I said, because I know what I wanted to say. And I said, I'm an egalitarian. And I said, I want to make a point to say, it's a wonderful career for you boys also.
Yes.
It's not just for girls. So there are even boys that don't think. Did you see the movie Good Will Hunting?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I thought that was, I was so sad from that movie.
Yeah.
Of the boys and the other boys in South Boston that were working construction, weren't thinking of going, why do you have to be a genius?
Yeah, they think you have to be born.
That's right. So there are all these boys around. So, you know, women engineers are not just an inspiration to the women.
You're right.
Do you have children?
I am planning on having children in 3 years. I'm 2 years married. To a Jewish man. So happy Hanukkah. I believe today is day 6, right? The 6th day.
And I just mailed some Hanukkah cards, I think 5 or 6. I still got another 5. Your half hour gave me a chance to write a couple more.
Yeah.
Because I've been so busy this week. Starting, I don't know, it's just I'm always busy.
Yeah.
Anyway, this has been delightful.
Yeah, this has been very delightful.
Take the cookie.
I think one cookie is good enough for me. So let me end it with saying that, so it's Wednesday, December 6th, 2018. This is an interview with Janice Rosbach.
It's really Janice Rittenberg Rosbach. Rittenberg with a U, B-U-R-G, Rosbach.
Oh, yes.
With an H.
Notable member of the Society of Women Engineers for SWE Oral History Project. The interviewer is Kimberly Wynn, and we are in Lexington, Massachusetts.
You said notable? Notable.
Yeah, I said notable.
Notable.
Yeah. You are notable.
I guess I've become notable.
Yes. Thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
So where do you live?
I live in Dorchester.
That's where Jeremiah Burke High School is. And you know, around the corner, by the way, you could look it up.